Bob, we were talking at lunch about that whole process between 3 and 7 being a prayer and action.
Yes.
If you could touch on that, please.
I thought I did, but maybe I didn't. Yeah, it's about carrying the decision forward. The reason why there isn't an amen on the end of the third step prayer because you aren't done. Okay? And that means you go on to 4, 5, 6, and 7. And that whole process is part of that prayer. My mind is fried or something. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Okay? We tell someone all our life story. Now, don't misread that, in that your inventory has to look like a narrative, because that isn't what it is. Your inventory looks like you answered the questions. That's what an inventory should look like. We may have certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the universe, with the spirit of the universe. Remember when I said that the book tells you what the problem is, what to do about it, and how you're going to feel afterwards? One of the tests in the fifth step, when you get done with it, is we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. That's a trick. Most people can't do that. Okay? And so after your fifth step, when you're done with your fifth step, go home and sit down and see if you can do that. See if you can be alone in perfect peace and ease. And if you can, it worked. Now, most people cannot do that. You know what? If you want to test your ability to be alone in perfect peace and ease, go home, sit down in a room by yourself. Don't turn on the TV. Don't turn on anything. Don't listen to music. Don't do anything. Just sit there and see what happens. And if you can't stand yourself, you didn't get it. Okay. It's really fun to be alone in perfect peace and ease. I got to tell you, I love to do it. I go home and I sit in my recliner like this, and I don't turn anything on because I love a quiet mind. Clarity is an enormous gift in this program. And clarity is what you need to carry the message, because you got to be clear about what you did. See, and when I went through this work, when I got done with every step, my sponsor came to me and he said, "Do you know what you did?" And I went, "I did this, I did that, I did that, and I did that." And he said, "That's right." And then we go on to the next one. And the only reason why he asked me, "Do you know what you did?" was so I could tell someone else what I did. You know, if I hadn't done this and someone said I'm dying from alcoholism, I have no direction. I can't tell them what to do. The best thing for me is get the hell out of the way. Okay? So, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. Do you have any questions about sitting down with someone and fist-stepping? I mean, what it's about is reading your inventory. But let me talk for a second about listening to a fifth step, okay? If you sponsor a bunch of people, you're going to wind up listening to a bunch of fifth steps. If AA here works like it does where I live, What's your responsibility to fix that? Now, can you be helpful?
Yes.
How can you be helpful?
Give feedback.
Okay. And
give feedback.
Yep. So you listen. The book talks about setting in motion trains of circumstances. Okay? And when you quit drinking, the train doesn't stop. And you go, oh, it's okay, I quit drinking. And they're going, screw you. We don't care if you quit drinking or not, don't come around here. So we set in motion these trains of circumstances. And they have a tendency to take years to slow down. So we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better, and taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page that contains the 12 steps, carefully reading the first five proposals. We ask if we have omitted anything, for we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Is our work solid? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If you're listening to a fifth step, listen for the threads. They're always threads. They're about control. They're about could be. There's threads in inventories. You'll hear them when you listen to them. And when you hear them, just mark them down. And then what I'll do is I'll do that, and as we go through the inventory, I'll just sort of make a list. And then when we get into when the person goes home and does 6 and 7, they have a list of things that they found objectionable or that they think are objectionable. The truth is we don't know if they are or not, okay? But we know what sounds objectionable. So they'll have a list of things when they go home, and giving them little feedback is fine. Now, it doesn't mean you just, you know, you write War and Peace while they're giving you inventory. It's just about, here's some things you may want to consider. This is really about them and God. Why don't you stand up, please?
Thousand words today too.
Wow. This can be pretty long, right?
I had an experience with the fifth step with a friend, and she called me up and she said, would you be willing to do a fifth step with me? And I said, oh yeah. And I was all excited and I was flattered and everything.
Honored.
So I go down to her house and she does the fifth step. And my perception of a fifth step was to give feedback. Well, guess what happened? She does the fifth step, she has little index cards, and then she does, and I give the feedback. I didn't want feedback. You're controlling. And I go, uh-oh, I really messed up. So, you need to ask the person, do you want feedback or no feedback? Or no, I explained to you, Al-Anons are a little different.
Yeah.
And you think you're different. We're real different. And so, you know, I went away thinking I'd made a mess of everything. So I just wanted to share that, because it wasn't the experience that
you were seeking. You know what? I rarely have people just come out of the blue and want a fifth step with me. They're usually people that I take through the steps. And I'll tell you a person that I will not work with, and that's somebody that tells me how they're going to do it. You go, no, no. I'll tell you how you're going to do it. okay? If you knew so damn much, why are you asking me?
Yeah, why are you here?
Wow. Oh my. No, it's just, it's all right, but you may want to consider, you may want to consider that the truth is more important than her feelings. There's a concept.
Didn't you say earlier that you might be attacked for your beliefs?
Me?
Yeah.
I am regularly. I don't care. I know what I know. Okay. So, we go home. We review the first five proposals. And if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We're emphasizing willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to have God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. And willingness is about the sixth step, okay? And that means that we come out of this fifth step with all this information about our defects and or those things which we found that we think are objectionable, but we ask what God's opinion is here. I don't know what's objectionable to God. I know what I think is objectionable to God, but I don't get to make decisions for God. So, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Yeah. You know, it's like cleaning a sandbox. Okay? If you got all your favorite toys in this sandbox, and you go to God in the sixth step and said, please give me the willingness to be rid of all of these things. And then you say, God, you can take every toy out of that sandbox, period. And that's about the willingness. And that's the sixth step. And if you're unwilling, ask God for the willingness. That's everything about the sixth step. You got all this information coming out of five, and now you go in there and say, God, here's what I think is going on. You can take the whole works, whatever you want. Okay? And I am willing to have those things removed. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, this is a seven-step prayer. I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We now completed step seven. Now look. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Which ones are those? Huh? Yeah. You know what? I'm aggressive. I am somewhat pugnacious. It's my nature. And I thought, when I wrote inventory and fifth-stepped and went into six and seven and said, God, take whatever you want, and I'm willing to not be that way, okay? And he didn't take it. So there must be some reason. And why would he want somebody like me sticking my nose in other people's business, okay? I don't know. I thought that was a defect of character. I thought being candid was an enormous virtue. I still think it is. Okay? But I don't know. I just go in there and go, God, whatever. And I am willing to be anything. I am willing to be silent. I am willing to be loud. I am willing to be whatever you want me to be. So, you know, just show me what you want me to be. He gets to choose. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Whatever you got in mind. Then it says something interesting. It says we made a list of all persons we'd harm, and we became willing to make amends to all. Go ahead.
Yes, but I want to share my experience on letting God take all my character facts. And it says good and take me as I am, good and bad.
Right.
I was very violent and destructive before I came to AA.
Yes.
And then I decided to change that. So I became very mild-mannered as I'm speaking, and I hardly ever raised my voice.
Yes.
Been sober a few years, and I was on, I used to be in construction around real tough guys and stuff. One particular day, one guy was in front of all the upper management, and he was making a scene. It was not my thing, you know, and most of the times I can walk away from situations like that. I choose not to be in those kind of situations. This particular time, I felt like I was supposed to say something. And I had, you know, prayed that morning, you know. And so I got into this guy's face in front of all the bosses, and I felt completely okay. I didn't know why, I didn't question, I just did it.
Sure.
Long story short, the result of that was that this particular person turned out to be an alcoholic. And no one, in the months that I spent talking to him after that, he said no one had ever stood up to him, no one had ever told him anything, because he had had everything his way. As a result of that, after months of talking to him from time to time, God used me as a tool, and he got sober as a result of that. Way out in no man's land, and this happened. So after that, and it seemed like you shared last night, like I'm thinking, what the hell am I saying? What am I doing? This is not me. Well, right. It is me. When I turned my life will over to carry God, I said, in return for you taking this away from me, I'll go and do whatever you want me to do. And I've had more experiences like that where God used me as a channel, and I knew it wasn't me because it was not something that I wanted to do. When I do something opposite of what I really want to do, I got to feel that's God. You know, that's God doing it for me in my life, what I'm supposed to. And that's a way of giving it back, I think.
That's a perfect example of intuitive thought. Doing something that's out of character, but feeling that there's a necessity to do it. And the only way you're ever going to learn how to trust your intuitive thought is by doing it. And if you hesitate and you're afraid to do what your intuition is telling you to do, you will never learn to trust it. And it talks about it becoming a working part of the mind, which means that it works. And that it's something that we learn to trust. And I trust mine today. And if I have a feeling to do something, I just generally do it. Okay? Even if it seems absurd. Now, when you start doing that, it'll take you some funny places. So... All right, so we made a list of all persons we had harmed. We became willing to make amends to them all. The next line in the book is we did it when we took inventory. All right. So if you write your inventory out of the book, then at the end of it, go back through your inventory and find out how many of those people you've harmed. And it's probably a bunch. And then it's important that you figure out what the harm is. Because you can't just go to somebody and go, I know that I must have harmed you. So I'm sorry. This isn't about I'm sorry. This is about balancing the books. Okay? This is about making it right. So I need to find out how I created harm in these people's lives. Now, I fired an ex-business partner. He wound up suing me for $4 million, right? And I wasn't real pleased about that. And I kept trying to figure out why I owed him an amend. Because I fired him. I fired him because he didn't ever go to work. And I was conflicted, I was ambivalent about making amends to him because I just could never tag the harm. I knew I really hurt his feelings. Yeah, I mean, he knew he didn't go to work, and he just lived in misery because he didn't know what to do. And then I fired him, and I knew I hurt his feelings, but I didn't know what the harm was. And I thought, well, is the harm that I hurt his feelings? And I found out that I didn't harm him, that actually I did something that freed him to become the person he could be. So I kept trying. I knew I'd hurt his feelings, and I just thought, well, God, if you make somebody feel bad, you must be causing some kind of harm, and that's not true. Okay, sometimes telling people the truth makes them feel bad. So I made a list of all the persons I'd harmed, and I became willing to make amends to most of them. And I told you last night that I was unwilling to make amends to my father because I really disliked him, and I figured the whole deal was on his side of the street, and it wasn't. And the part that I didn't tell you was that my dad, who was an absolute, I mean a serious, everyday, chronic alcoholic, would call me once a year, no matter where he was, on my birthday. It was amazing. He'd call me on my birthday, and he'd call up, and he'd go, Bobby. And I knew it was him, even though he was slurring real bad, and he was really drunk. I mean drunk to the point where he was almost unable to hear what he was saying. And I'd hang up on him. And I thought, oh, shit, here he is again, right? And he'd call me up and he'd go, Happy birthday! And I'd go, click. And then the following year, he'd call me again. And my amend to him was that I held him at arm's length my whole life because I didn't understand his alcoholism until I was an alcoholic. And my sponsor told me, do you know how difficult it is for a chronic alcoholic to pick one day out of the year and call you? You know what that took? You know what kind of willpower that takes? And he said, he's been trying to touch you for years, and he's trying to be a dad even in the middle of his alcoholism, and you just blew him off. And I said, okay. And he said, so go make amends. And I'm going, it's not anytime soon. And then I went and did it. My dad died not too long after I made the amends. And he had adult onset diabetes like I do. But they hadn't made the advances in diabetes back then. And as a consequence, he started, do you know if you have diabetes, eventually your circulation, if you can't deal with it, your circulation goes to hell. And they had to cut off one of his feet, then they had to cut off his other foot, and then they were talking about cutting off his arm. And they just have to start whittling pieces off of your extremities until it gets to your core of your body, and then that gangrene kills you. And so they were whittling all this stuff off of him. And they called my uncle, his brother. And they said, look, we're going to have to amputate an arm. And this is just going to go on until there isn't anything left. So do you want to let him die now, or do you want to let him die later? How many surgeries are you going to put him through? And it was my uncle's considered opinion, and I would not take exception to this, ever, that they ought to just let him die. And he knew it at some level. And when people would come into the hospital and he'd be sitting there in his wheelchair, he'd scream. Couldn't talk. He'd scream. Just scream. Noise. And he did that out of despair. And see, the four horsemen of alcoholism are terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And of them all, despair is the worst. And he would sit there in despair knowing he was going to die, and he couldn't do a damn thing about it, and he didn't even get in to make any decisions. And that's the way he died. And that's the way people in my family have been dying for generations, and I don't have to die that way, and you don't either. I've had wild stuff happen to me about money. Took 2.5 years to pay off $15,000, paid off $250,000 in 90 days. Got sideways with the Internal Revenue Service. They told me, they said, I get a letter one day, right? And it says, 10 years ago, because it was grandfathered, you took a $15,000 deduction for a limited partnership. We have reviewed your records, and we have decided that we want the $15,000 back. Plus, we want $65,000 in penalties and interest by return mail. Well, that's only $80,000. Shit, everybody's got that in their checking account. So I'm trying to figure out what to do with this. I don't need those people on my butt. And I said, I was talking to a guy that I sponsored that was an attorney. So what do you do with this? And he said, best defense is a good offense. And I said, we avoid retaliation and argument. And he said, not in this case. And I said, no, we do. We avoid retaliation and argument. And he says, no, the book says, and then see, when you get sponsees telling you what the book says, that's where you really get it up. I mean, that's, you go, wait a minute, I taught you this. See, and then they're cramming it up your backside. And I'm sitting there, and he said, no, this says you go make the best deal you can. And so I said, what do you suppose the best deal is? And he said, sue the federal government. So I did. I sued him. It took me 5 years and about $5,000. And then I went back to the Internal Revenue Service with an attorney after all this time. By this time, the tab had gone up to $122,000. And I'm sober a long time, and I'm going, what are you doing, God? Right? And so I went back there, and I said, I know there's a solution, but it was a scary deal having those idiots on your butt all for a long time, for 5 years. And I went back there, and I sat down with an attorney, and I said, I've decided, because you can go bankrupt on federal income tax, that I'm going to give this attorney $2,500. And you are going to take a hike. And you and your $122,000 are history. So do whatever you want. That's my intention. He said, you'll hear from us in the next couple of days. And I said, okay, what are you going to do? I mean, I don't know. And I went home, and they said, send us $3,500 by return mail, and we'll call it even. Right? Sometimes life is so damn scary you can't hardly even stand up. Okay? Sometimes it looks like the world's ended. Sometimes it looks like you've lost everything and you are in deep stuff for the rest of your life, or that you may not even survive. And so I had the $3,500. I just sent him a check the same day, return receipt requested, and that was the end of the deal. Okay? I got the message from a guy I sponsored. I'm supposed to get it from somebody a little higher than that. You know what? God puts people like that in your life. We truly are a succession of miracles. And if you don't see it, your eyes aren't open. and you want to increase the miracles, increase your effort to get close to God. And if you owe people amends, go do it now. You know, why don't you go make amends? You know what that's about? It's protecting your ego. That's why people don't go make amends. I don't want to look bad. So go make them. Get clear. One day I didn't have to cross the street to avoid anybody, and that was the greatest day of my life. And I went out. I was a bill collector in Chicago. And I used to go beat in people's doors and smack them up against the walls. And there were people got hives when I showed up at their house. There were people who used to come in and make peace offerings to me. I was a 240-pound psychopath, and people just wanted me to, you know what? I went back to make amends to some of them. I went, what can I do to make this right? And they said, stay the hell out of my life. Okay. If that balances the books, God bless you, I'm out of here. And I will, if I see you, I'll get out of the way. I'll go across the street. I'll just make sure you don't ever have to look at this mug again. And that's what I did. Okay? Whatever works. You know, you think people ought to come up to you and go, I'm so happy you're sober. And some of them will. I'm so happy you're sober. And no, you don't have to pay me the money back. And actually, that happened to me. I had an uncle that had lent me $2,500 in the depths of my alcoholism. And when I'd been sober 3 years, he came out to visit me, and I had the $2,500, and it was the last financial amend that I had. This is my Uncle Leif. You can tell I'm from Wisconsin. And I said, Leif, I've got your $2,500. And he said, Bob, isn't it about time you and your wife bought a house? How about using that as a down payment? And I was afraid he was going to say something like that, and I couldn't let him. And I had talked to this guy before he came out there, and I said, Jesus, what if he didn't take it? And he said, well, I don't know. Are you man enough to accept it? Are you big enough to allow someone else to give you a gift? And I thought, no. And he said, why don't you give him the pleasure, if he chooses, of giving you something that will make a difference in your life? And it was one of the hardest things I ever did. He said, why don't you put it down on a house? And I just gritted my teeth and I said, thank you. Okay. You want to know something about money? And if you don't have any, you're going to think this is BS. Okay? The truth is, money isn't that tough. It isn't. We are living in a river of abundance. And all that it takes to get that is to believe that. At some point, you're going to start asking yourself questions if you do this long enough. And the question is, wait a minute, there's the life here that I see, and then there's the life here I don't see. And the difference is, I know there's a temporal life because it's going on right here. I mean, this is the visible life here. But there's life going on behind that called the spiritual life. And which one is real? Okay? And because visual proof is the weakest proof, I choose to believe that the spiritual life is the real one. Now, because of that, you know, I don't want to get too far afield here. Because of that, there are two things that everyone rules their life by in the temporal world that don't occur in the spiritual world, and that's time and money. And you want to know something? We all spend all our time worrying about time and money. Okay? I don't. And you're going to, I hope this doesn't irritate you, but I've never had a problem with money. It's always when I've gone. It's there. I don't worry about it. I don't worry about time either because I'm living in eternity. And if I'm not here, I'm there. And my whole job on either side of that plane is to be pleasing to God. and whether I'm here or there is really irrelevant. So we go make amends to everyone we've harmed. We do whatever we can. If somebody doesn't want to listen to us, as long as we make the effort, it's fine. If there are people that we can't find, or people we have to write letters to, we write them letters. If there's people we can't find, we remain ready to make amends if we get the opportunity. And then you move on to 10. Now. So let's talk about 10. You want to talk any more about amends? Huh? Here are the instructions in step 10. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when you see them, ask God at once to remove them. Talk to someone about it, and then resolutely turn your thoughts to someone you can help. Those are the instructions. You can tell people that agree with the steps instead of do them, because all they want to do is talk about prayer and meditation. All right? As soon as you start talking about step 10, they go, well, you know, I pray about this and that, and then I meditate for 30 minutes a day, and I do all that in the nature of my 10th step. When the instructions on the 10th step come around, that isn't what it says. So how do you do that? Let me find... That thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the Spirit, and our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And my question was, what the heck do you think I've been doing? Okay? Now it's to grow more in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Okay? You don't get anywhere. There is no terminal point in this program. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone and make amends quickly. If we have harmed anyone, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. For we have ceased fighting anyone or anything, especially alcohol. Alright, so how do you do a 10th step? If you've written inventory, you know what selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear feel like. Because you relived it in your 5th step. Okay? So we know what that feels like, and when we get into that, then the response is to go into the 10th step. And what we do is that we go, well, geez, now I'm in resentment here about this. And so what I do is I get on the phone. We have a system called 10th Step Buddies, and I would strongly suggest it to you. We have 3 or 4 people that we choose, and all you do is you call them up and go, hey, can I use you for 10 steps? Now, if they know what a 10th step is, they know what you're asking them. That means that when you're in selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear, you're going to call them up and tell them you're in doing that. You turned inward. And then they're going to ask you a couple of questions. And the first question is, did you ask God to remove it? And the second question is, did you turn your thoughts? Okay? Those are the questions you ask somebody when they 10th step with you. A lot of times our 10th steps will turn out about, we'll go talk about this and we'll do the mechanics of this thing, and then we'll talk about perspective. Okay? most of the time, if I'm in fear, it's because I've lost perspective. And so I will talk to someone that's on one of my 10-step friends, and I'll say, here's what's going on. What do you see? And they'll go, I see this, this, and this. And I go, well, that's not what I see at all. And I go, well, you may be mistaken. You know, a lot of times when you call up somebody with a 10-step, we think we have this inclination to make everything personal. And most of the time it has absolutely nothing to do with us. See, there's a book called The Three, what's it, did anybody read it? The Three something. And it's these three rules of life, and one of them is don't take anything personally. And see, my inclination is that if you're talking about something, and this is a really self-centered belief, if you're talking about something that has something to do with me, and so someone will say something to me and I'll take offense because I think it's about me and it has nothing to do with me. Do you know most of the time when people are mad at you, it has something to do with them and nothing to do with you? Do you understand that? It truly isn't about you at all. And a lot of time anger is directed at you because they don't want to be mad at themselves. Okay? And so many things have absolutely nothing to do with us. And my inclination is to rise to the bait immediately. And then I take offense, and then I want to retaliate. And before I go out there and punch somebody in the nose, I call up somebody and say, hey, I am really angry. And here's what happened. What's going on? Has God removed it? Yep. Did you turn your thoughts? Not yet. Okay? Do you know what? A lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous read Emmett Fox. Emmett Fox's idea is, Emmett Fox was a tent preacher in the 30s that used to speak at Carnegie Hall. And Lois and Bill Wilson used to go listen to him speak. And Emmett Fox had an almost profound effect on what Bill Wilson believed. He was just a good preacher. Wrote some good books. Sermon on the Mount's probably the best one. And what Emmett Fox believed was that if you're in selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear, you turn your thoughts to God. And what Bill Wilson wrote was that if you're in one of those things, you turn your thoughts to someone you could help. Why would you do that?
If you want yourself.
Right. Okay, so the really magic part of the 10th step is getting out of self by turning our thoughts to someone we can help. It makes sense first to turn to God, and you turn to God by saying, God, please remove this. So that immediately puts it on the spiritual plane. And the second thing you do is you turn your thoughts to someone you can help, so you get out of yourself. Okay? It doesn't say go help somebody. Did you notice that? It just doesn't. It said just turn your thoughts over there. You want to go help me afterwards, that's fine, but first get the hell out of yourself. Okay? That's what that's about. And that's what the 10th step is about. So we've stopped fighting anything, especially alcohol. Remember when we talked about who and what you are and what your principles are and who your friends are and all that stuff? You don't have to defend yourself. Part of fighting is defending yourself. And if you know who and what you are and what your principles are, you don't have to defend yourself because you already know who you are, okay? And that you don't need to defend that. You chose it. If you think that it's attached to spiritual principles, why the hell would you defend it? So other people are going to take exception to who you are, and that's their problem. And we cease fighting them. Okay? anyone or anything. Why? People come up to me and go, I'm writing inventory on George Bush. Don't you think that's a crime? No. You know, I don't know what the deal is. You know, everybody's doing the best they can. I look at all that stuff and you go, why are you talking to me about that? I really don't give a rat's ass. Quit defending yourself. You don't have to. If you're who you want to be, it requires no defense. You know the easiest way to stop an argument? I agree with them. You can't argue with somebody that agrees with you. You know, I work with inmates all the time. Excuse my language. They'll come up and go, you're an asshole. And I'll go, uh-huh, sometime. Now where? Where's that go? Think I'm going to invite them to dinner? You know, where does that go? Doesn't go anywhere. You know what? I am. I'll cop to it. I don't care. I'm like everybody else. Sometimes I'm good, sometimes I'm bad, sometimes I'm fun, sometimes I'm not. Okay? That's the end of it. We react sanely and normally. Gee. For by this time, sanity will have returned. If you're to the 10th step, you're sane. You want to act like an idiot? That's your business. But you have been given the power to act sanely and rationally at that point. And so from that point forward, it becomes a choice. And if you are going to go out and you are going to do some sort of antisocial behavior or think you're going to run your stuff on people or run a scam or do whatever it is, that's on you. Because by this time, sanity will have returned. That's an enormous blessing. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. It talks about recoiling from it as from a hot flame. I've had that experience. People slip booze in your drink or do shit. I get a visceral reaction to it. One thing I took exception to, we'll see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. And you go, come on. No effort on our part? How do you think we got this far? Okay? You want to know the truth? It's all a gift. You know earlier in the book where it says willingness is the key? Willingness is the key. You want to know why? Because God will make all this happen. I mean, this isn't something we make happen. God made all this happen. And our willingness to engage in this process is what gets us there. Not our effort, but God looks at us and goes, they're willing, and so I'm going to give this to them. And that's what he does, okay? But we think we got all this power and that we're making all this stuff move. And the truth is, we aren't making anything move. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day where we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. Try that. We are going to get up with the express intent of doing that. Get up in the morning, and as part of your 11th step, say, God, I want to take the vision of your will into all my activities. All my activities. See what happens. I have a girlfriend. And I said, let's invite God into the bedroom. She said, what? And I said, let's invite God into the bedroom. And she said, okay. And I said, God, please be part of this beautiful part of our relationship. Why not? It's a gift from God. Right? Why shouldn't I have God everywhere? Why shouldn't I take God in business? You know, it's really easy to be spiritual at an AA meeting. It's a hell of a lot harder when you walk out the door. So, if you want an interesting experiment, when you get up in the morning and you do your 11-step, ask God for the power to bring the vision of His will into every single activity that you have. Think you can do that? Kick in the pants. Really is. Man, I mean, that adds a whole different dimension to everything you do. Isn't this fun? How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. You know what the proper use of the will is? Doing God's will. All right? That's the proper use of the will. Okay, so you know what? We're going to take a break now. It's 3:30.